This is New Classical Tracks from listener-supported American Public Media. If you're enjoying this podcast, the best thing that you can do for this show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word. And also take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Baritone Will Liverman is an incredible singer. I mean, if you've heard him in any of his Metropolitan Opera performances, you know what I'm talking about.
Even in the moment of our earliest kiss.
He also does a lot of other projects. His most recent is a collaboration with pianist Jonathan King. It's a two CD set called Show Me the Way. And on this set, what you're going to hear are incredible women composers who celebrate the American art song. Some are classics, and some are brand new. These are works they commissioned for this project. Oh, and by the way, Will Liverman does a duo with his mother. She's singing, he's at the piano. We get to hear about this from the voice himself, Will Liverman. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher.
I only hope with the mild hope of all who watch the leaf take shape upon the tree.
Will, I'm going to talk to you, of course, about your new recording. I also would like to just talk a little bit about some of your operatic roles. So I'd like to just start right there. First of all, thank you so much for making time for this conversation.
Of course.
I'm looking at your upcoming engagements, and your dance card is quite full. And currently, you are singing in Gounod's Romeo and Juliet at the Met Opera. Tell me about the role you're singing and what you're appreciating the most about it.
I'm singing the role of Mercutio, who's Romeo's friend and a part of Team Montague. And, you know, it's really awesome to come to the Met and do something standard and to tell a story that's familiar to, you know, the general audience. And for me, I love this role so much because of the fun and lightness in it. You know, Queen Mab is, you know, his big hit number towards the beginning of the show. And it's just nice to be able to approach more of like a character role and get into the fun of it. There's a nice, like, there's a really cool sword fight that happens later in Act 3 that's a lot of fun to do. I mean, of course, unfortunately, we know that both Tybalt and Mercutio get killed, but it's nice to be able to explore different things, you know, the sword play and just all the fun that, so just to the demands of the character. Bringing more of that side, because I've done a lot of serious works over the past few years, so it's nice to switch it up and do something like this role. It's been a blast to do.
I want to ask you about some of those serious roles, because they really have been pivotal roles in the world of opera. I know that you played X, the title role of X in The Life and Times of Malcolm X, and then also, of course, in Terrence Blanchard's Fire Shut Up in My Bones, which won a 2023 Grammy Award. So they recorded that opera. Is that right?
Yeah, the Met, I'm not sure if they do it for every opera, but sometimes they, you know, especially for the HD and the new works, they'll record the opera and turn it into an album. And they submit the albums for Grammy consideration for Best Opera Recording. And that year, Fire was one of the nominations, and we won that year. And it was a really special moment, and honestly, it was kind of like icing on the cake in a way, because just that time of Fire Shut My Bones was so special and pivotal for me, you know, doing that role coming out of the pandemic after the Met was, you know, kind of locked down for about 2 years. And yeah, I look back on those memories just sort of in awe of the whole experience and what we did on that stage. Very special time.
And of course, it was also pivotal in that it was the first opera by a Black composer ever performed at the Met. What does that mean to you, getting to play the lead role? And I mean, there were so many historic elements to that.
Yeah, you know, going into it, it was honestly quite terrifying at first, because I was going into Fire kind of right. You know, things were slowly opening up in the pandemic, but you know, still it was very, you know, we were unsure of what was going to really happen. I think, you know, the Delta variant of COVID was running rampant, and I was just sitting on a couch pretty much this whole time. You know, I'd done a few gigs, like kind of that were socially distant and a lot of Zoom things. So getting to New York and then seeing my face on the New York buses and all that stuff was just so, it put me in a state of shock, honestly. Like it was really, I mean, it was cool to see, but at the same time, I was reminded of the weight of what we were about to do. And I realized in that moment, this was, you know, it was bigger than me, and that I had, you know, I wanted to step up to the occasion and really, in a way, honor all of the performers, the Black performers and composers that have come before us, that have paved the way for this moment to happen. And so I just kind of let that guide me through the role of Charles, and I had such a great support team from the cast and everybody, and it was yeah, it was truly poignant and one of the milestones of my career for sure.
One of the other things you were doing during the pandemic was sitting on a couch brainstorming the project we're about to talk about, which is a 2-CD set. It's called Show Me the Way, and your collaborator is pianist Jonathan King, who is amazing. I
Yes.
have to tell you, every time I listened to every song, I was just like, wow, he's just got the right touch. And he really was and is a collaborator
Oh
in
yeah.
each of these songs. How did the two of you become collaborators?
Man, I could write a book at this point. We've been working together for nearly 20 years almost. We met each other a week in college when we went to undergrad together, and we started working together my junior year. We started to do recitals. Then we both went our separate ways for grad school, but then we always made a vow to work together and to do recitals. No matter where, we would just find a venue. And back then, you know, when Facebook events were a thing, we'd just invite people. We pay for the venue out of our pocket, just for the sake and the love of song and being able to make music together and make programs. And so that was always our foundation of how we like to collaborate. And then we did actually our first album, Whither Must I Wander, is a self-made project that we recorded and with another label maybe a few years ago. Yeah, we've been working together for a long time, and so to do this project is a really special thing. Yeah, Jonathan's such a great guy. He's actually my best friend as well. And you know, we were sitting on the couch. He came to visit during the pandemic, and we're sitting there like thinking about what our next project might look like and what we wanted to do. And we sort of thought about the idea of highlighting female composers for their contributions in art song, and at the same time trying to find ways to commission female composers of today and bringing in new works into the fold. And so that was sort of the genesis of it. And then we kind of just came up with all these ideas and documents of what we wanted to do, and then sort of narrowed it down to the program. And it was, yeah, about a 3-year project in the making, and I'm really happy with how it turned out with Sidi Records. And yeah, it's a special one for sure.
And you started to think about your mom,
Yeah.
and she provided some inspiration for you. Tell me how she has inspired you.
Yeah, my mom has really been my biggest inspiration. You know, I grew up in a very heavily gospel background musically. And she still is the songstress of the family, truly. And she also writes a lot of her own music. That was one of the things I remember as a kid. She'd have a old tape recorder, and a song would, like a gospel song, would come into her head, and then she would record herself and then play it back and then add layers to it. And you know, she's always been super creative, and I think that's where I get that gene from for sure. In addition to her singing voice, and you know, growing up watching her sing in choir, she was always the lead soloist in just about every gospel number we did at church, and was just always a leader. And you know, watching her over the years, and my dad as well. He was a jazz musician. He played trumpet, and they got me started off on piano when I was really early. So I'm thankful really to them both for introducing me to music and just the major impact, is always around in the house, and I always had a keyboard and was able to just start creating very early. And I think I'm really thankful for that foundation of gospel music and kind of just the free flow nature of what gospel music is, because it's really been sort of a blueprint of my musicianship and really informs some of the things I do with classical music as well. For the longest time, I've wanted to feature my mom on something, and I thought this would be the perfect project because she is also a composer and a great songstress. We both arranged the piece that was made famous by Mahalia Jackson, If I Can Help Somebody.
If I can help somebody as I travel along.
So you are collaborating with your mom on that last song on this collection. You're the pianist, and she's the singer.
Tell me
about that. Is that, we don't hear about Will Liverman, the pianist, very often.
No. Well, she was calling the shots there. I was just kind of was backing her up and what she wanted to do. And it's special for me because piano was, my first passion. And as much as I can, I still like to play every once in a while and write music. And so to be able to use that part of my brain and to work with her and arranging that piece was really, really cool. It's a special thing to see her get featured and to support her in that way.
In my living shed.
One of the things about this recording, 2-CD set, Show Me the Way, is it's also about collaboration, and you have some incredible collaborators on this recording. Your mom is one of them, and some of them are also composers and people who are writing incredible text, and there is a new text to celebrate Black joy, and it's in the form of a suite, a Sable Jubilee. Tell me how this work came about and why it was so important to celebrate Black joy.
That was actually one of the first ideas that John and I were talking about. You know, for me, I have been a part of a lot of very significant, important pieces about Black stories. But, a lot of it can be very heavy because that's, it's our truth. But also, I think there's a balance with, the Black pain and the hard things that we go through in this country and, as a people. And I think Black joy is something that's also very important to show, just because that's my life experience.
Black joy is a tapestry woven by belly laughs. Electric sliding through gradients of melanin.
Being around family, having a good time, going to cookouts, church, whatever the case may be, that's just so innately there. And to be able to, I wanted to find something, a song cycle to express what that is. And I looked to actually Ticia, who's a great performer. I didn't realize that she also was writing poetry and lyrics and text. And so I tapped her and told her about this idea. And I had heard the name Jasmine Barnes. She's an up-and-coming composer and is doing a lot of great things now. And really, I think, is, one of the important composers of now and into the future. So teaming them up to come up with this, they came up with Sable Jubilee is the title. And these three suites just sort of really hone in on different points of, Black joy and what that means. And it's one of my favorite cycles. We actually premiered it live in Aspen maybe 2 years ago. And then they were able to come there, and it was really a special evening. So to have that recorded and be a part of rep and people have access to it is really happy with how that turned out.
Can you walk me through these three movements just a little bit and tell me what it is you really love about each of these pieces?
Yeah, Jasmine's so great because she has such a unique and witty and just such a brilliant writer. And I love an inspiration in the first movement. You know, she samples a lot of different, you know, famous Black songs. From Al Green. Color Purple, and different flavors of music that just heighten what Black joy is, and, you know, the smell of, you know, sweet potato pie. And it's just like that text immediately, and just how they said it just puts me right in, because I know what that is and I know what that feels like. And it was immediately like kind of a locked in moment for me. I could feel every single phrase, and just it resonated with me so deeply. And it's just upbeat, and it's just, it really signifies and sets the tone for the cycle. Luxury is sort of it's a different feel, you know, it's kind of a little more relaxed and reflective. And for me, it represents for me, you know, being proud of who we are. I think that's to me the message, and it really, listening to it for the first time, nearly brought me to tears.
One of the things I actually wanted to ask you about that is, it sounds to me like this is giving you a chance to really lean into your gospel roots.
It is, yeah. I mean, the whole set is just so authentic. And what I love about the Luxury piece, you know, the text says, you know, we're proud of ourselves. You know, why wouldn't we be?
We're proud of ourselves. Why wouldn't we
It allows me to tap into, more of my gospel roots and how I, you know, grew up singing. But I mean, of course, I'm using my classical voice, but there are lots of, what I love about Jasmine's writing is, you know, she allows for there to be space to kind of go in and out of, you know, more of that gospel style and more of that soulfulness, you know, that's just so special. And just tapping into different colors to really bring out the text and really bring out what that joy is. And, you know, Luxury is just set so, so, so beautifully.
Themes and variations of onyx, obsidian, ebony, raven, jade.
And then Elevation is just really like the celebration, just sort of a joyous sort of outburst and a great way to close the cycle. I love the towards the end how she switches styles, starts off very slow and mellow, then it picks up in tempo. And then we're kind of like full on church at the end.
Resonant warriors rejoicing, vibrating.
And then it takes it back, and we're in the jazzy world.
Satellites orbiting above. and still creating our own.
It's just the color palette of what she brings out in these different styles that are very authentically Black are really, really special and so crafty too. So I really appreciate that cycle and everything they did for it. I really hope that people, you know, listen to it and perform it on recitals. And, you know, it's just really something else to add to the canon that's, you know, that's positive and shows, you know, Black people in a state of joy and just is an uplifting cycle that I'm very proud of. And it's tremendous.
One of your favorite songs is on this recording, and it's by Florence Price. It's called I Grew a Rose. Why is this one of your favorite songs?
So John and I, we put this program together, and he actually suggested I Grew a Rose because we wanted two Price songs on the program. The first one, Song to the Dark Version, is actually interesting because that's the very first song I learned as a high school student. When I was in Governor School, I was introduced to classical music, and my high school teacher at the time, Mr. Brown, he gave me this anthology of African-American art songs. And for whatever reason, he assigned me a Song to the Dark Version. And of course, as a kid, I didn't know like really what the text was going over my head, but the music was beautiful.
Would that I were jewel, a shattered jewel, that all my shining brilliance might fall at thy feet.
And it was a Florence Price song. And so I knew I wanted to set that, and then we wanted to pair it with something. And then I listened to I Grew a Rose, and I was just obsessed with Price's writing. And it's just so, so glorious and melodic.
I grew a rose within a garden fair, and tending it with more than loving care, I thought how with the glory of its bloom I should the darkness of my life illume.
One of my favorite, if not my favorite thing, like you said, on the program, just with how it's set. And, you know, for me, song is so much about access to text in a different way. I mean, utilizing your voice, but being able to really express how you want to without, you know, competing over an orchestra or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just you and your collaborator, and you're able to just shape and bring out different things in the phrase of how you want to. And I think something like I Grew a Rose is like the prime example of John and I's musicality and like how we work together. When Jim played that back, I was just and performing it, I was, you know, it's just something, you know, you have those pieces that you just get really into, and every single word, every single phrase is just like right there, and it's just alive. And yeah, I love Price's writing in general, but I Grew a Rose is a special one for sure.
I'm latching onto what you said about your high school teacher turning you onto that Florence Price song with text by Langston Hughes, because I have talked to so many Black musicians who never even knew this music was in the repertoire until well into maybe the graduate level or even into their doctoral program. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That your teacher was, I mean, tell me a little bit more about this teacher who really steered you in the right direction.
Yeah, the great late Robert Brown, who taught at Governor School in Norfolk, Virginia. Him and Alan Fisher were the head of the voice department there. And actually, it's really special because there are quite a few of us that were all there at the same time that are still performing today. Freddie Ballantyne, who's in Romeo and Juliet with me at the Met, is singing Tybalt. We went to that school together, along with Ryan Speedo Green, who starred in Champion, Krista Williams, Adam Richardson, Josh Conyers. So there's a handful of us, and we were all there around the same time. And we all took a trip to New York, I remember, as high schoolers, and went to the Met and saw like four or five different shows sitting way up in the nosebleeds. But it was something so special about reminiscing on those moments. And then here we are like 20 years later singing on the stage. But it all started at Governor's School. And Mr. Brown was my voice teacher and mentor. And he really encouraged me to sing and to pursue opera. And he was a big advocate of African-American composers because he knew the importance of making sure that, you know, these composers were visible for us and that we had, you know, other options to, you know, sing their works and, you know, create platforms for their works and put that on the stage. And so I had that anthology as a kid and, you know, would look through some of the songs and that Price song and Riding to Town, which is on my other album, Dreams of a New Day, is from that anthology.
I'm also curious how you're approaching that song now, 20 years later.
Yeah, it's quite different now that I'm a little more aware of what the text is and, you know, being a grown man. And it's interesting too. Our tempo is a lot slower than how most people take it. And I love what we did for Song to the Dark version because it's just super sensual. Setting it that way for me, you know, we took a risk, but I think it just really allows us to like stretch out the text and express things how we want. And, you know, we're so locked in that piece. And it's all Price. I mean, you know, like we're interpreting it, but like she's a master of kind of marrying piano. And there's so much storytelling in the piano and the great vocal writing that she does. It's brilliant writing.
One of your other collaborators on this recording is a mezzo-soprano who joins you on The Prayer. Tell me about this piece, please.
Yeah, so I'm really thankful for the collaborators that we have for this project. You know, that was another big piece of the puzzle. We really wanted to, you know, find duets, and there's, you know, there's power, I think, in bringing voices together. And Janae Bridges is a dear friend. You know, we've known each other going back to Glimmer Glass Festival when we both did the Young Artist Program, like 2010 now. So, and we both did the Ryan Center Program. And so she was someone that I wanted to be a part of this album. And Renee Orth is a composer that I really admire. And I did her 10 Days in the Madhouse just past fall in Opera Philadelphia. So I tapped her on the shoulder to commission. In honoring, you know, female composers, we also wanted to find female librettists for some of the works. You know, not every song, there's male librettists in this too, but we wanted to also try to define moments to also highlight female librettists. So we asked Renee to pick something by Sarah Teasdale, you know, who's a significant writer, and something about The Prayer and the text just really stood out, and it was just so different from everything that we had. You know, it's simple, but it's very powerful in its meaning. And with how she said it, it's just a really, really kind of stop in time, and a really complements and fills out the album in a significant way. And yeah, I love how she wrote for our voices. And you know, that's the thing, with being writing duets, you know, I think it's just something about with the voices coming together, it just enhances the storytelling and what you do with the text, and just, you know, makes it all that more meaningful.
Mercy. Oh.
Nicole Cabell joins you on a piece that comes from the only opera by Amy Chaney Beach. And I have to admit, I didn't even realize she wrote an opera.
Yeah.
Tell me about this piece, and which is a chamber piece too, which is unique on the recording. And how did Nicole become part of this project?
Yeah, well, for this one, I've got to give another shout out to John King, because when we were thinking of the program, he actually found this piece. Because again, I didn't know that Beach had written any operas. And, you know, he's a big nerd when it comes to like finding out or looking up, you know, he's knows a lot of repertoire and is always looking for things. And he found this opera called Cabildo, which is it's highly unknown, and it's like it's a one act chamber opera, and it's about this smuggler Pierre who's falsely imprisoned, and he is in jail, and his ghost kind of comes and frees him. It's a really weird sort of story, but the duet that he found, All Love is a Jasmine Vine, between the two is just so stunning. I mean, it's so operatic, so rich in how it's set, and I just thought that this was just something, you know, when John introduced it to me, that we needed to do. And with Nicole, she, you know, is someone that I've always admired. She, you know, was the first African-American to win the Singer of the World competition. That's how I heard about it, through the Cardiff competition. And she was in the Ryan Center program, I think a few years before Janae and I had gotten there. So I always, and we did Highway 1 together in St. Louis. And so she's someone else that I, you know, as an artist, I really respect and admired, wanted to feature her. So we tapped her to do the Cabildo, and that's how that came to be. In addition to that, the getting Tahira and Lady Jess, like we wanted to find more of like an ensemble piece to kind of vary the program a little bit and have a special piece with violin and cello, and that is, it was perfect. To have them come and be a part of the album and to do this duet just really made it so grand. I don't know much about the rest of Cabildo, but I'd be curious to watch if they have access to the whole opera, because the duet, I think, is really stunning and beautiful.
One of the other world premieres on this recording is by composer Libby Larson. Tell us about the poet with whom she worked and what you find most charming about these pieces.
You know, Libby, she is someone, of course, that I've always heard about. As a leading female composer, and for her to write for something for us is truly an honor, because as we highlight up-and-coming composers, you know, like Jasmine and Renee, it was really special to also highlight someone like Libby, who's paved the way. And so we asked, or Jonathan had a connection with Libby, and we asked her to write something for this project, and she, she came back to us maybe a few months later after the initial ask with this guy Ted Burke, who's an American poet and critic and a bookseller. And the cycle, the Machine Head, is just this imaginative, very accessible story, about this bookstore and this shop that's known, for its, high-profile visitors. And it's really all about wonder and Ted's own story as a kid, too, in the second movement.
Deep in the spaces of the garden.
Well, one of the things that I was noting about these little songs that she wrote was she changes the setting of the songs. So we get everything from blues to some hard-driving boogie.
The hippest machines of our day does not think.
Yeah, and in the third movement, Machine Head, it's what really one of my favorite.
When someone invents batteries that never run down.
When you were putting this project together with Jonathan, you know, it was kind of like everything just seemed to flow. Now that it's all together, what was most memorable for you?
Whew, man. Several moments about this project have been really memorable. You know, I think for me, I love recording so much because the freedom of expression and being able to take a song and interpret it and, you know, work with someone that you trust to come up with, you know, your best interpretation of something and putting it out there in the world. And I, for me, you know, this whole album and how we came into it has been special because each collaborator that we've had has brought their artistry and creativity and perspective into, you know, what we've been doing. And so each session is so magical and different in its own way. I remember like when we recorded in DC, you know, Renee Fleming was like our Hail Mary pitch, you know, to have her be on the project. And of course, you know, she's one of the most prominent and leading opera singers of our time. So to be able to feature her, and this was special. I remember, you know, she came in and I had never really worked with her in this capacity of recording, but just to get a little bit of insight of like how she works and how her mind works and, you know, what she wants and how she, you know, delivers a line in a recording session. And just, I don't know, just her approach, I would say, to recording and collaborating. For her to like open the door up to us, like Jonathan's like, what do you guys think? We're like, oh, I'm, you know, like, what do you think? You know, and it was really cool to like kind of, you know, settle in, and we're all working together for the Sarah Kirkland Snyder piece, Everything That Ever Was, which is another stunning work that I'm so proud of that it's just, you know, to have out there. But each individual session that we've done and all the work that we put into this project has been really the moment for me because, you know, I'm just a big advocate for pushing the art form forward and, you know, doing my part and leaving something behind and adding things as we can to art song because it's just an art form that we really care about. And want to continue to see it thrive and want, you know, young singers to get in on it and have all of this big program of new works, some older works and things that aren't really performed that often on a bit more visible and given a platform is really a special thing. And to top it off, to work with really great people is just the thing that fulfills me the most. So, yeah, it's been great.
You showed me. I was someone in distress.
Baritone Will Liverman talking about his new 2-CD set, Show Me the Way, a collaboration with pianist Jonathan King. Thanks to Valerie Kaler. She's our producer for New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher.
My sky was so. I never knew I'd feel a thrill. I couldn't dream a dream until you showed me the way. The more disappear.